válido de lunes a jueves. You
the Safari Park. You're killing me, Larry.
Larry, fucking Larry.
Larry from that Larry show.
For men with balls.
Take off your pants.
Larry, get into bed now.
Larry.
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 Come on, Larry. Larry. Larry.
Everyone's heard the story of the frog in the frying pan. Or the frog in the pot, or the boiling frog. The French are probably very familiar with that tale. Is it true? Well, according to a video on YouTube, it sure as hell is. The video looks 100% genuine, and right before your eyes, some guy boils a live frog. How does PETA allow that to remain? There are three reasons the frog stays put for his own demise. One, he's cold-blooded. He adjusts his body temperature to match his environment, so he's comfortable just about anywhere. Two, the rise in temperature is incremental. If you put a room temperature frog in hot water, he'll jump out fast. But if you place him in tepid water and slowly raise the heat, Froggy remains comfy. It does not move. Listen to the guy narrate as we watch the live frog boil.
Because we're raising the temperature slowly, he doesn't recognize the danger he's in. He just keeps going along with the changes in his surroundings. Eventually, we can turn up the burner to a deadly boil. He will just keep trying to adjust with it. By the time he realizes it's killing him, it's too late. He won't notice in time because he just keeps changing himself to go along with the changes in his surroundings.
Reason number three, frogs are not smart. By the way, at the very end of that video, the guy revealed that he used a real frog for the harmless part of the video and a rubber frog for the boiling part. At some point in our lives, most of us behave like the frog in the pot. We remain in some negative situation, a school, a job, a relationship, a dwelling, a town, that is slowly morphed from good to shit. But we seldom describe it so graphically, huh? If you do, it feels like an admission of our own failure to change course. So how do we describe those periods in our lives? We say, it's not so bad. What a way to characterize a chunk, or worse, all of one's life. It's not so bad. Or that other phrase we use to rationalize bearable misery. It could be worse. Yeah, sometimes we find ourselves trapped. We know things are shitty at work or home, but we've got bills to pay, kids to feed. So we gut it out. Thoreau summarized it best. The mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation. Ditto for plenty of women. Several people remarked that lately on this show, and the other one I do each Monday with Darren O'Neill, which you can find at planetrage.show, people are saying that since I escaped Los Angeles, I seem calmer, even happier. Well, I believe that's true. For the last few years there, I felt a lot like the boiling frog. The incremental diminution of quality of life is insidious. Some of it assaults your senses, like tent cities under freeway overpasses that reek when you get near them from the stench of streets being used as toilets. But there are other signs of a place in decline. You notice those peripherally, but they still take a toll on your mood. Storefront after empty storefront as businesses abandon the city. Tall stone walls and gates popping up in front of homes capped by security cameras with fisheye lenses on 15-foot poles. Some of the walls talk to you.
This area is currently under surveillance, and loitering is prohibited here.
Attack dogs barking behind those walls 24/7. Police copter gunships bathing your home at 2 a.m. with their midnight sun jillion lumen searchlights as they chase another felon. After a while, all that ugly shit becomes the soundtrack of your life, normalized. And it gets to you. About a year before I fled L.A., I realized I'd not had my ass in my bicycle seat in a long time. Both tires were flat and had a thick layer of dust. Why would that be? Well, because I had to endure all that bullshit when walking moose. So why would I tolerate more of it on two wheels? Since I was a small kid, I've always been a bike rider, not a cyclist. I have nothing in common with those weirdos in their spandex shirts and dick helmets. Next time you see those guys, check their faces. They invariably look miserable and or pissed off. It's as if they found a way to eliminate all pleasure from riding a bike and made it a chore. They might be going 3 blocks for a pack of gum at 7-Eleven, but they're all decked out like Lance fucking Armstrong in the Tour de France. I never liked that guy. Always struck me as a phony, and George Carlin felt the same way.
I'd like to begin by saying, fuck Lance Armstrong. Fuck him and his balls and his bicycles and his steroids and his yellow shirts and the dumb, empty expression on his face. I'm tired of that asshole.
To be fair, I have met a few cyclists who are good dudes. But most do seem to be assholes. In Los Angeles, they were uber assholes because the government gave them permission to ride in the middle of traffic lanes on major thoroughfares. Everywhere but the freeways, where it actually would have made sense since the average vehicle speed at rush hour, which is basically all day long, it's 11 miles an hour. They would ride several abreast and never, ever stopped at a stop sign. They consistently ignored every traffic law. I found the Lance Armstrong clone so fucking annoying, I wrote and recorded a song about them, which was part of a screenplay I was pitching a while back. I think I'll close today's show with it, and I think you'll dig it, so stay tuned. So now I live on the Connecticut shore, and damn near every day I'm out on that bike. It's no carbon fiber racer, just a fat-tire cruiser with a few gears and a seat as comfy as a Barca lounger. My rides are sublime. No attack dogs, no talking security cameras, no razor wire. No cop choppers overhead. That crime dystopia was relatively new to Los Angeles. It was born as a result of the commie politicians like Silver Spoon Maggot Gavin Newsom, who wants to be president after they sideline Joey, which I predict will happen before Halloween. Then, Veep Cameltoe will finish Joey's term, and by November, the national loathing for her will be so intense that even her family will vote for Newsom. But back to boiling frogs. If we look over the shoulder, and that could be a painful glance, we can often locate the crossroads where we took the wrong path. But even when we take a mistaken turn, we can usually correct it. My daughter's high school graduation last June featured a bunch of average, boring speakers, until one woman took the podium and was absolutely electric. I wish I'd recorded her. She was that good. While the others spewed tired tropes, platitudes, and such, this woman gave some terrific advice. She named a few successful people who started college or careers in one field and didn't find success until they changed course for something completely different. And invariably, a thing that fed their soul. Her takeaway was, don't be afraid to change course multiple times. Great counsel. Too often we believe changing courses equals quitting, so we bang our heads against a concrete rebar wall in the name of not quitting. So many people hate their jobs and their professions. Attorneys who hate law, doctors who hate medicine, and so on. But it's an avoidable tragedy. We fail to check that rearview mirror as often as we should. And what if another day or week or month or year or decade slips by and we're still in the same place? If it's a good place, a life that's generally peaceful and fulfilled, well, congratulations. But sometimes we feel like we're sitting on the shit pile without a fly swatter or in a pot of water that's getting hot. Some frogs get boiled because they're too distracted or simply unaware. I lived in New York City during its most lawless period. Getting mugged was not a question of if, but when. I had a few close calls, but hyper-awareness and agility kept me from harm's way. Some of the most dangerous places were subway stations. You really took your life in your hands there, especially during off hours. Often the double staircase would take a blind turn, and that's when you were most vulnerable. I guess I was 15 or 16, built like a greyhound. I headed down the first flight, but when I made the sharp turn for the second flight, there were three assholes flanking me. I knew immediately what the score was. Doing an about-face would have been futile because one of them was already moving behind me. Adrenaline is a beautiful thing. It hit me with incredible force. I felt lighter than air. I grabbed the center banister with both hands and vaulted the entire flight, which is easily 15 steps in a single bound. I don't think parkour had yet been invented, but I'm pretty sure that's what the move was. Then I sprinted through the tunnel to a manned change booth where someone was in there with a phone to cops. As I made my getaway, I heard one of my would-be attackers shout, "Holy shit!" I guess he was astonished by my Olympic-caliber jump. Of course, none of that would have mattered had I been unaware. Millions and millions of Americans, 81 million is the purported number, are now frogs in the pot, and they have no idea that they're being slowly boiled. Many work from home, and when that's done, well, there's Twitch, limitless free porn, Grubhub and DoorDash, Amazon and Alibaba, so there's no reason to leave the house and face the outside world, or reality. If for some reason they must exit the apartment, they can slap on some Beats or Marshalls to cancel unwanted audio. Video is moot. They're usually staring at their phones as they walk. How ironic that what was hailed as the information age has produced the most unaware and ignorant generation in all history. They are very frog-like in many ways, prone to long periods of inactivity, willing to comply and adjust to their surroundings as long as they remain comfortable, happy to eat bugs, and most of all, easy prey for coyotes, foxes, raccoons, hawks, owls, badgers, animals that share key attributes besides their predatory nature. Predators move almost constantly. They're hyper-aware at all times. There are no mysteries. Hey, it's getting late. I want to hop on my bike before dark. And I promised you a song about those Lance Armstrong clones. If there are some listening, they can send hate mail to thatlarryshow@gmail.com. However, if you like what you just heard, slide over to thatlarryshow.com for hundreds more episodes. And while there, click the Patreon or PayPal button and support the show. I'll see you next Wednesday or thereabouts, I know. And until that time, take no shit.
When I pedal past your Porsche, I know just what you think. There goes another helmet wearing, spandex sporting gink. I got the everybody hates me. When I'm dressed up like a moron blues. when you see me riding your way, be sure to tell me I'm a fool. My helmet's like a teardrop, chin strap pulled up snug. My tongue is swelled up like a sponge and my eyes are crazy bugged. Compression shorts around my butt, my legs are shaved and tan. From the waist down, I might be a girl, but trust me, I'm all man. I got the everybody hates me when I'm dressed up like a moron blues. Some fiesta colored lycra really puts me in the mood. My bike seat gets so sweaty, I can barely stay on top. I'm a scofflaw to the traffic laws and invisible to cops. Hydration straw hanging from my mouth like bogey cigarette. At times like that, I think I'm cool, but you won't let me forget. I got the everybody hates me when I'm dressed up like a moron blues. When I'm riding through your town, make sure to tell me I'm a fool. You say my helmet's streamlined. Well, that's just being kind. We both know what it looks like, yeah. I can read your mind. From my clingy thermal tights to my Velcro closer shoes. When I'm dooted up like this, I'm a magnet for abuse. I got the ain't nobody loves me dressed like a moron blue. When I'm riding through your town, be sure to tell me when I'm riding through your town. Make sure to tell me when I'm riding through your town. Be sure to tell me I'm a fool.